grow and to keep us all happy. And this weekend, he is actually in Oregon taking care of some personal business, family business. And I think he is going to be at that football game tomorrow. A little primetime action. That's going to be a big obstacle for Colorado playing Oregon. And he's going to, I'm sure, have a great story to tell us next month on the podcast from his little experience at that game. But I'm really excited when we talk about Oregon. I have someone here with me today that is one of my best friends and favorite people in the world. I was at the University of Utah in the 90s and played basketball there. And I have joining us today Mike Doliak, and really good friend of mine, and not only a great basketball player, and I'm not joking when I say he is a genius, and I will have a story to share about that, but he is a phenomenal person. And anyone that's had the chance to watch him play, follow him in his career, and get to know him would say the same thing. I actually told my assistant, Jara, that he would be on, and her dad's a big Utah fan, and reached out to him, and she texted back and said, my dad just said he is such a class act. And so you either got everybody fooled or you're doing something right. But I do want to welcome Mike Doliak to the podcast. Mike, thanks for being with us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And Mike's in town. They're doing a Hall of Fame induction tonight, so he's here to support some friends and that played with him back in the good old days. When I say good old days, we are definitely getting up there in age. And Mike has blonde hair, and so do I, so you can't see the grays, but I might say there might be a few coming in.
There's a few coming in, maybe some in the beard, too.
Yeah, looks good. Yeah. Looks a lot of wisdom coming in there. So I told Mike, we've been talking a lot about the HERO program and how we're trying to find a way in our business to become our own hero. We all have different strengths. We are drawn to communicating with people in different ways, and I have been personally so impressed with what has been shared so far, and just trying to figure out ways that I can apply that into my own workday that fits me, my style of work, and just learning from your wisdom and experience and what's working for you guys, I think has really benefited all of us. In talking to Mike, you know, even if you're in an athletic field or if you're in a business, you're sitting at a desk all day, you're going to have different seasons of your life where you have these highs and you feel like things are rolling. And then whether it's an economical issue, an injury, doesn't matter. You have a winter can come through and you're just waiting for the summer to come back. And so I'm going to have Mike share his story a little bit, but I do have to tell you, when we were in school together, we were in biology, and I don't know if he remembers because, you know, he was like front row looking at the teacher and I'm in the back with my big book. The teacher would ask these questions and I'm like looking through the book to figure out these answers. And Mike's like, I'm like, how does he know the answer to this?
Yeah, I'm book smart. I'm not street smart.
I would beg to differ, but photographic memory. I'm not joking. You do, right?
I kind of do with certain things.
Yes. If you have a conversation with him about anything, he will know something about everything. If he's heard it, he just could put his head down on his desk on his little book and it would just go right into his head. And I was always so jealous of that. But Mike played basketball at the University of Utah from 94 to 98. He came in at 17 years old, so he was really young. And he's 6'11", but that's not unusual in men's athletics and men's basketball. But he started, he played. He was strong, but super smart. And just also knew who he played for. The coach really liked him. And if you know Rick Majerus, that wasn't the case for everybody. And he was a student of the game. And he had a very high sport IQ. And he had a lot of success at University of Utah. He played on the Final Four team. And then he was the 12th pick overall in the NBA draft.
Mostly at Utah. I was surrounded by really good players. Got to play with Andre Miller, Keith Van Horn, Alex Jensen, Drew Hansen, Hanna Matola, who's getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. So basically, I was a really good role player and was able to excel in that framework. And then being around guys who were really good. Like Andre is the superstar. Keith was a superstar. Hanna was a superstar. Like those guys had amazing talent. The Johnson brothers, Britton Johnson, was really talented. And it takes guys with extreme talent, and takes guys who do other things as well. And there were a group of us who could do everything else really well. Drew, Alex, myself, made it work. And we had great coaching. great coach.
You did. You had a special group that went through there talent-wise, but also you really connected with each other, supported each other well. But I think part of being successful is also understanding your role. Mm-hmm. And you accepted that role, and they made you look really good, so good that you were 12th pick overall in the NBA draft. So you did something right, yep. Not giving yourself enough credit. But all those guys were awesome and still connected today, which is really great. I'm going to let Mike tell you a little bit about his story, kind of going through the NBA and to where he is today, and then really dive into some things that I think are relatable to a lot of us. And he has a lot of wisdom. He has a lot of experience in his young years. He's done a lot of things, and I'm excited for him to kind of share his story with us. Now, I am going to have Kimber let us know. Please, if you have questions, put them in the chat, and we'll treat this just a little bit different if you guys, you know, about his career or what he's talking about, but want you to feel like you can ask something to Mike. It's so good to have him here, and I know you guys have followed or known him from the past. So feel free, and Kimber will let us know if a question comes up.
Yeah, so I'll try and keep my story short, because what I used to think was important, I don't think is quite as important as more. Maybe that's a little bit of wisdom, but I grew up as an Army brat. My dad was an orthodontist in the Army, and we wound up moving all over about every 3 years. I was born in San Antonio. We went to Kansas City. We went over to Germany. We came back to Texas at Fort Hood. We went up to Alaska. And then he retired from the Army and moved to Portland, Oregon. That's where I went to high school. And then from there, I got a scholarship to Utah. Came here and played, and then after Utah, wound up getting drafted and bouncing around the NBA for 10 years. Played in Orlando, Cleveland, New York, Denver, Miami, and Minnesota. Orlando for 3 years, Miami for 3 years. Those were my two longest stays. And at the end of my career, wound up getting married to another Utah athlete, Shannon Bowles, and she was a gymnast at the U.
Incredible gymnast.
Yeah. And came back here to Utah after my playing career and went back to school and got a master's in physics education, which is interesting because it wasn't an actual degree. Rich Ingebretson, who was a doctor and a physics professor, he still is actually, I need to call him today. He helped design this program because I didn't know what I was gonna do next. And I wound up getting into teaching, taught high school physics for 5 years and wound up coaching a basketball team. And I'm not a good coach at all. I learned that, and I stopped teaching. And then as the pandemic started in end of 2019, early 2020, my wife and I started looking into farming, and we wound up buying a farm up in Montana, and we moved up there in 2020. I've been doing that for 3 years and kind of now really feel like that's the fit and where we're supposed to be. And we're learning a lot about what to do different, what to do better, and what not to do.
And hopefully bring it to the rest of us in a couple of years.
Yeah.
Educate us. So one thing about Mike is he's always been someone that's really positive, and he always found a lot of joy in life. And he's 6'11", incredible water skier, slalom skier. And he'd be behind that boat, and I just remember driving it, and he's out pulling deep, deep, deep turns, and the boat's just like moving as he pulls behind it. But unbelievable athlete outside of basketball, but also just knew how to enjoy life and could wakeboard, clear the wake. We'd go on horseback riding trips and there's nothing he wouldn't try, but he's really passionate about the outdoors. When he came to Utah being young, it was really not because he was this high school standout for 4 or 5 years. Tell us maybe a little bit about that transition. What got you to Utah?
Yeah, I was a late bloomer. And so coming into my freshman year in high school, I was 6'1". That was tall, but there was 4 or 5 boys in the high school bigger than I was. And I grew from 6'1 as a freshman to 6'11 as a junior. And so basically all I did was eat, sleep, and do my homework. And I was super uncoordinated. I got cut as a freshman from the basketball team because I was growing and couldn't walk and chew gum. And that was fine. As a sophomore, I made the team, but didn't really play. as a junior, I made the team, as the varsity team finally, but didn't really play. I was one of the last guys off the bench. It wasn't until I stopped growing after my junior year and started to figure out how to move and become a little bit more coordinated that I finally started playing and becoming a decent player. And that's just how it went. And I did a lot of playing on my own. We lived in Portland at the time, and we belonged to an athletic club where the after-work guys would come down and play every day at 5 o'clock. And so I spent a lot of time, especially that freshman year, playing pickup with those guys. And I would, you know, as I made the team, I couldn't go play pickup because I was at practice and stuff during the time. But I would go play pickup with them in the summer, and I'd go find parks and play. So I just spent a lot of time playing. And mostly it's because there was this AAU team that I thought was really cool. One of my high school teammates played on it. It was called Triple Threat, and I don't know why, but I just thought it was neat and thought he was cool and wanted to be part of that team and wanted to get better. So I just kept doing it. And it certainly helps being 6'11", but I could shoot, and I played a lot and just kind of figured out how to make it work.
Now, what is it true that you just went to a camp at University of Utah and Majerus saw you there for the first time, or had he seen you before and invited you there?
So, yeah, that's a good question. My dad, after my junior year and I was 6'11", he wanted to know if I had any chance of playing college basketball. My dad went to West Point, and one of his classmates at West Point was friends with Rick Majerus. My dad knew that, so he called his classmate and got in touch with Rick and asked Rick if there was any way he could come watch me play somewhere. And I had just made that Triple Threat AAU team, and so we were going to Long Beach to go down there, and Rick says, well, I'm going to be at that tournament, so I'll come watch. And the game he came and watched, I barely played. And so he tells my dad, well, I can't really give you feedback based on 3 or 4 minutes of playing time, so why don't you send Michael to my camp here at the University of Utah, and I'll tell you what I think based on that. So I'd never started a high school game. I barely played in this AAU tournament. So my dad sends me to camp. I show up, and Donnie Daniels is at camp, and he's one of the assistants. And I say, well, we have early morning workouts, so you can come at 6:30 and get some post work if you want before camp starts at 8. So I showed up and did it. And then at dinner time, hey, we're playing pickup ball at dinner time if you want to play. Well, I guess I'll go play pickup. And so I went and did that. And it was just being able to follow instructions and showing up that I think impressed the coaches. And on the third day of camp, coach sat me down on the steps outside the Huntsman and offered me a scholarship. I didn't know what a scholarship was. I never started a high school game.
He just wanted to play for Triple Threat.
Yeah, and I'm like, I'm playing basketball. Why are you playing basketball? I don't know. Came to camp. It's kind of fun. Why'd you show up at the early morning workout? I don't know. Donnie said it was a workout. So I showed up. Why'd you play pickup at dinner? I wanted to eat, but I don't know. They were playing pickup, so I went and played pickup. I didn't have a lot of independent thoughts until I was like 28-ish, probably, something like that. It's like, why are you doing that? I don't know.
Well, thank goodness, because that served you well. But I do have to say, like, that there's a huge point in that. It's like, so many times we don't say yes to things because we're afraid to fail, or we're afraid to be embarrassed in some way. And having never started a high school basketball game and being willing to go play, when they're inviting him for workouts and to play pickup, this is with the current team. This is not with people in camp. So the fact that he didn't have independent thoughts was amazing, because he would have otherwise probably said no, where we're all at today of like, let's just do what we're comfortable doing. Let's not fail. Heaven forbid we fail in front of people and get embarrassed. And he has a story of growth because of the failures that he's experienced to get here today. And so I do love that, because I think that is a great story just to... And what it's done for his life moving forward is incredible.
Yeah, and what... The ability to fail and the willingness to fail is the most important part of success. And as athletes, it happens very, very quickly. And like you said, playing pickup with the current team, like Keith Van Horn was there, and like it was so much better than me then. And you go there and you quickly get your butt kicked, and you either keep getting your butt kicked, or you figure out a way to do it different. I was pretty good at figuring out a way to do it different and get better. And you get better very rapidly from the experience of failing or getting beat or this and that. And you try it different. You get beat again. You try it again. And you learn how to not get beat.
And playing with people better than you.
People better than you. That's how.
Surrounded by people better than you.
Correct. That's like at the end of my college career was the NBA lockout. And I wound up playing pickup with the Jazz for that summer. And so getting to go play against Greg Ostertag and play. Be a part of that crew of guys playing, that helped me accelerate my transition from college into the NBA, because again, I was playing with guys who were better than me. And it was either figure out how to fit in or get left behind. And the unique part of being an athlete is that we get to experience that so rapidly. What was really hard with me in the transition from my playing career into my post-career life was failure happens much more slowly. You don't get another opportunity immediately to try something new. And that was a huge adjustment for me because I was scared to fail. I was used to being good because you can have 32 successes in a day and 180 failures, and it feels good because you had 32 successes. You won 32 times. Well, I got into teaching, I got into coaching, and now I got into farm where you can fall on your face and you don't get another chance until tomorrow. And so try again tomorrow. And that felt very different and strange to me. And over time and being in it and staying in it, I've realized it's the exact same thing. You just have to be a little bit more patient and sit in the discomfort of not knowing what to do, of not knowing how it's going to turn out. And then after whatever happens, reflect on how'd that go? Did it end up the way I wanted it to end up? If yes, great, try it again. If not, great, try something different. And it's as simple as that, but it does require being willing to be uncomfortable.
So you've talked a lot about just how important it is to fail. And we have talked before about just, have you asked your kids, what did you do to fail at today? And it's not a bad thing. It's the way we grow. It's the way we improve. And, but also trying to figure out what failure looks like for us individually, it is an action. Failure isn't not trying. It's actually trying something. With this HERO program, every single thing that has been taught to us, if we apply one part of it, it doesn't work, then try another part of it. It's not doing it. It's doing it and maybe it not working for you, where we grow. I want to dive in a little bit deeper that I think is never talked about. And Mike even can go into this. He's sitting on a retired board for athletes and maybe share kind of their perspective and then your personal story with that transition and not just the successes people have had, but some of the failures, specifically your 3-year period.
Yeah. So when I retired, I immediately went into getting a master's and back into school, which I knew that world. I knew the educational world, and that one you have very clear feedback and successes and failures. And so that was easy. So I went through about 2.5-3 years of being in school, and then I got into teaching. I transitioned from getting my degree to now applying my degree. And that transition was incredibly difficult for me. Like, there is no scoreboard as you walk into the classroom. You don't know how you did. And I couldn't wrap my head around that for a long time. So I went into a period of depression because I would sit in front of a lesson plan. And at 5:00 at night, I'd start to plan my lesson for the next day, which was Newton's first law or Newton's second law. And it would be a blank page. And at 10:00 at night, it would still be a blank page because there's an infinite number of things you can do, and I couldn't pick one. Because what if I picked the wrong one? What if I didn't do it? In my education degree, you have to learn to differentiate and teach every kid and not teach, leave any child behind. And this kid needs this kind of instruction, this one needs this. I couldn't even give one lesson. So that part was overwhelming because you got to be able to crawl.
Was there too much structure? structure.
Not enough. Okay. Not enough for me the way I did it. But the person I got as a mentor, who's an excellent teacher, she was very less dependent on structure. She could wing it a lot better. And she was comfortable with that. I couldn't wrap my head around that, and that's how she operated, so I struggled. I like a textbook and an organizational system that you can then deviate from, but you can't deviate unless you're structured. So I would sit there, and I basically wound up trying to plan lessons, but couldn't, and freezing, not doing, errors of omission, not errors of commission, mm-hmm. and I didn't sleep for like 3 weeks. And when I stopped sleeping, the wheels fell off the bus, and I lost confidence in myself, and my brain stopped working. And it took me 3 years to come out of it.
But you're a professional athlete. Isn't life perfect? And you have this money and you have this confidence.
No.
I mean, you went into a different season, a different time.
I had no confidence as a teacher that what I was doing was effective. And I wanted to quit. And I tried to quit. I did quit, actually. After the first year, I did quit and stopped. And that didn't help anything. And depression got worse. And so then I called my principal and said, hey, can I try again? And of course said yes, come back, and wanted to quit again after the second time because like I just couldn't do it. I couldn't wrap my head around it. And it took two mentors, Janice Jones and Ed Mulick, who were chemistry and biology teachers. And I'd walk in their classroom with that look on my face, like, oh my, like, and they just shake, oh my God, all right, what are you doing? Here's what you're gonna do, go. And like they just were so helpful in getting me over the hump and getting through some of those tough times. And it just took time and exposure and seeing that, oh, it does work and it can work. And it's just longer. And like there are good days and there are bad days. And I wound up getting through that period. And I tried coaching too. And I think I love teaching. I'm not a good coach. And I don't enjoy coaching as much. Didn't enjoy was being inside all the time. Like as a teacher and a coach, I was inside in the school from 5:30 in the morning to 9:30 at night.
For you, that's depressing.
Yeah.
You're not saying
what. And so spending more time outside being a farmer is way different, way better. And farming can either be a boring, tedious pastime or be the most intellectually engaging occupation you can possibly do. Constantly learning how to fix things and calculate things and report things. I use Excel extensively in tracking how much forage we have on the ground, how much we're heating, how much it all works. And so like my physics degree and my biology degree become so useful, and I get to apply all this through the course of failure. Like I've had things blow up in my face. I've killed a side-by-side already because the air filter got so dirty and I didn't check it that it started sucking dirt, and then it started wearing out the valve seals, and then the oil starts burning up, and then I'm running it with no oil. And it's like simple things that are obvious, but they weren't obvious to me because I'd never been in that world. And so now it's like I learned what to check, how to check it, how to do this, how to do that. It's all really simple, and it's all really totally complicated at the same time. And so
and you love that.
I love it. But back to what you asked me, the transition wasn't easy. I tried some things first that I thought I would like. It turned out I didn't like. It wasn't what I was meant to be. I like parts of teaching, but not all of it. And that's not where I'm supposed to be. There are plenty of teachers like Janice and Ed. What they're supposed to do in life, they're doing it. They're teachers. And they're amazing teachers. And that's what they're supposed to do. And they're amazing coaches. I played for some. Right? And that's not me, and that's okay. And so trying those things and failing at those things and going through those periods of tough times helped. I couldn't have gotten to where I am now without doing that, because when I retired, it wasn't about farming. I didn't know that's what I wanted to do. It took some different experiences, and when we bought the farm and went, we didn't know that that was going to be it either. And right now it feels completely right. Like I love it. I love every day and what we're doing and the challenges and the process of moving to an actual profitable, productive farm. And we're not there yet. We're not turning a profit. We've been cleaning up garbage and fixing things and learning how it all works and messing things up constantly.
which can be really fun. And you have 200 acres to really turn into something amazing. I have no doubt you will, because of your intelligence, and Shannon's amazing, her nutritional background and your drive. But and what a great opportunity for your two boys to go out there and to fail every day with you, to give them some freedom and a little bit liberating and scary at times. You said there's a lot of dangerous things out there, but they're learning and growing and driving at 15 and experiencing life, which I love. Teaching kids that at a young age and giving them that trust at a young age, I think, is really important. I know you're a safety first person too, so it's not just here you go. But I kind of, you know, when we talk about being in this season where we're at in our jobs, this industry, and it's tough and it's this grind every day. And I always, you know, everybody's so different, but the mindset, how do we show up every day? How do we stay positive every day? You know, we're working hard. And then, you know, you wake up one day and you're just not in the mood to do it. And you talked a lot about the power of structure and routine and how important that has been in the successful times of your life. And I know that that is the key, is that habitually we get energy off of a routine and structure. As soon as I don't do something, if I don't work out in the morning, my day is very different than if I do. It gives me an energy. But motion equals emotion. So if we can't create emotion of positivity and energy, you've got to move. And we find ourselves sitting all day in this industry. You got to get up and move. You might have to go for a run. You might be someone that has to work out in the middle of the day, because we have to create a different emotion than what we're feeling. But in the process of all of it, you have to find what you're passionate about in this business. And we all do this business very different, while also being willing to learn from other people and try things that we don't know that we could fail. But, you know, at the time that we don't want to work and we're really struggling, the time in that 3-year period where you wanted to quit, who are the people in your life? Like, do we have people in our life that can help us, that surround ourselves with these people that can help us get out of it, that bring that positivity, that bring good energy? Who was that for you?
Yeah, it was my wife and my dad. My wife was there for me through the whole process, and there to just be there and listen. I mean, there were days when I was just rocking catatonically on the counter and couldn't move. And she sat there through that, because there's nothing you can do. And when I wanted to quit, like, one thing you're not doing is quitting. That'll just make it worse. That'll just make it worse. Go do it. And she couldn't understand what I was doing. And looking back, what I was thinking and feeling doesn't make any sense. Like, I believed I could not do it. And I certainly could do it and did do it. And there's no reason to have that experience. But it happened. It was real. And my dad was another one who, like, pushed me. Nope, you're not quitting. Keep going. There's no reason. And there was a lot of differing opinions. Like, a lot of people thought, like, the depression was a chemical imbalance in my brain, and I'm going to be on drugs for the rest of my life. And I was on drugs. I tried drugs. I saw psychiatrists. I saw counselors. I saw everything. And ultimately, it was people and trying and failing and continuing and pushing through that got me beyond that point, because I had a belief that it was my own perception of what was going on that was the problem, not a chemical imbalance in my brain causing this depression. Like, I had this, for some reason, all of a sudden I started believing I can't do it.
And you've never really been that way.
Never. Never. You want to do this? Yeah, hell yeah, let's go do that. Yeah, I can do that. Yeah, I can do that. I might not be the best at it, but I can do that. Let's go try it. And for some reason, I can't do it. And it just, like, continuing over and over is what got me there. And like you said, having people behind you, pushing you to do the right thing.
Do you remember when that I can't shifted back into I can? Or was it just a process?
It was a process, but I do remember, like, Ed and you, like, we'd go to these professional development sessions. Like, every Monday you'd have professional development as teachers, and I disagree with that fundamentally. It should happen in the summer, and then you go execute, then you do it, practice again in the summer and go execute. Well, we'd go in there and they'd fill us full of all these new things we're going to try. And, like, I'm barely holding on. And so I'd come out of those meetings and Ed would see it in my face and just start laughing. He's like, look. I've been here 29 years. I've been through 12 principals and like 11 superintendents. What that tells you is they're going to be gone. All these new ideas are going to go away. What you need to do is go teach the kids. That's your principal, that's the boss. So we're going to smile and nod. We're going to say we're going to go do all these new programs, but you're going to go teach the kids. Because next year, that program probably ain't going to be here. And that principal might not be here, but you're going to be here and the kids are going to be here. Go teach the kids. And it, like that kind of woke me up because I've always been a rule follower. And I always, you know, why do you do this? Why do you show up? Donnie says, show up at 6:30. Okay, I'll show up at 6:30. I need you to do this new program. Okay, I'll do that new program. Even though like that got in the way of me just teaching the kids. And the relationship between people is what's so important. Not all these theories and ideas, but like getting in, looking a kid in the eye and seeing like, what are you confused about? What do you need help with? Most of them, it has nothing to do with the subject, whether it's physics or math, English or that. They just need connection. They need to know you care. And when you do, it goes pretty well. And if they see that you're willing to put the work in and show up and help them and care, they care. And they'll most of the time show up and do the work. They're kids, so there's going to be some times they don't. And that's normal. And I could really wrap my head around that, in life, at least in the physics classroom, because not everyone wants to do physics. I love it, but not all kids do. I can get that. Well, I got to find different ways to do that. The reason I was a really bad coach is because I can't understand why you would play basketball and not love it. Like, so I didn't understand the need to motivate a kid in basketball. Like, you don't have to be here. Like, in physics class, you kind of have to be here. And I get it. You don't like it. Okay, let's figure this out. I'll make it work. But in basketball, I couldn't figure out the need to do that. It's like, well,
just don't play.
Don't come. I could wrap my head around that. Like, I'm telling you what to do. Just go do it. Like, I expected people to be like I was with, you know, my coach, like, do this, okay, got it. But it's different now, and it needed something different, and kids need something different, and that's okay, especially at some of the lower levels and high school levels where it should be more about fun and experiencing and getting better. Like, it's okay if you're not good. Let's go get better. If you get a little bit better today, that's a win. Great job.
And it doesn't matter how old you are. That is the policy. That is the principle. Just get a little bit better every day. I think you bring up an awesome point too, because you taught for 5 years. The final 2 years, you learned to do it your way, which was really your gift, is connecting with people. You really genuinely care about people, and that's who you've been forever. The curriculum got in the way,
yes,
of that, of being human, you know, and it turned robotic, and you didn't connect, which you lost the passion. And I think in since the pandemic, that's been the case with us here too, of like, the people that are having success are actually back out meeting with people and going to closings and finding ways. And any of us that aren't, we're justifying why we're not doing it. It's hurting us as individuals emotionally and in growth, but connection. We need connection. And I love that. I think routine is important. I think structure is important. But I think ultimately the connection is really important. And having people in your life that can be really honest with you, that can push you. We're all built so different, and we don't like to be told what to do sometimes, but we all need people that can be honest with us and push us. And so where you are now, what is your, what kind of message from everything in life as we wrap this up, that you've been through, that you would really want to pass on, or that you kind of live by, a motto or just something that.
Yeah, I guess it's two things. Like, the ability to connect with the natural world, I think, is what we're missing as a species, as a society. Like, we connect with devices way more than we connect with other humans. We connect with the forest and the trees and the dirt and the soil and the animals. Just find a way to actually get your hands dirty. Stop separating ourselves from the natural world.
I love that. I mean, I know where I find joy, you know, out on the water or in the mountain or
walking outside and looking up and seeing the stars and just that wonder of what does that mean? What's out there?
We might not go as deep as you in that regard, but we can appreciate the beauty of it.
But it's still beautiful. Yeah. There's a poem. Yeah. Anyways, when I heard The Learned Astronomer, that's a great poem, which talks about the geeky side and just looking up and admiring the beauty of the stars by Walt Whitman. It's one I have
now. And what's it called so we can look it up?
when I heard The Learned Astronomer.
Okay.
By yes. Walt Whitman.
Do you want to share it with us?
No.
Okay.
Not right now. I'd probably mess it up, but I actually re-memorized it on the hike the other day, because that's what I do when I walk around sometimes. But aside from connecting,
yes.
It's being willing to fail, being willing to sit in discomfort and process it, reflect on it, and move forward. Because you don't experience the good times without knowing what the bad times feel like. I mean, that's just how it is. And so those two things have helped me so much in the transition from my career into careers that didn't work out into what I'm doing now. And I just love every day what I get to do. I mean, I'm still using technology. I drive a truck. I drive tractors. I use computers. But I touch the dirt every day. I put a shovel in the ground every day. I touch the animals every day. And I fail every day. And I win every day. And you figure things out. And I'm exhausted every day, and I sleep amazing because I'm just tired. And it's a good, mentally and physically tired. Some days emotionally tired, like, you know, raising kids is hard. Being married is hard. Like, my wife and I, we don't always see eye to eye. Most of the time we do, and sometimes...
Well, she's 5'2", so I don't think we ever see eye to eye.
She is not 5'2". She's maybe 5'1". All of 5'1". Like, 5'1", which rounds up to 5'1".
So your eye to eye is definitely...
Yeah, she's definitely tougher than I am.
She's amazing.
Which is good. But, you know, it's those challenges of going through those emotional... highs and lows, the intellectual highs and lows, physical highs and lows, and, you know, like you said, motion is emotion, and, like, I completely agree with that, too. Like, when I don't move and when I don't exercise or use my body to do something, I feel worse.
Yeah.
So it's funny, like, most of what we do now on the farm, like, you don't have to go to the gym because you're already, like, picking up heavy stuff and walking from here to there. And, like, there's a lot of exercise just in doing what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. So awesome.
Yeah. It is. It's cool. And it's instead of having to go to the gym, it seems so artificial. Like, we've created this life disconnected from the natural world where now in order to exercise, we have to go to the gym. I think that's misinformed. I think we should work towards a way of living where you don't have to.
I would love that. My backyard probably wouldn't give me much of a workout, right. But you know, I'll find that form. But no, I appreciate you so much. And just, I have so much respect for you. I mean, our whole lives as we've reconnected, you're always doing something different, something new and continuing to evolve. And just an incredible example. And I love the vulnerability of that time that was so hard. And I think people just, oh, life's successful and look at where Mike is. And it's, how did he get there though? What has he been through? And every single one of us have those moments, mm-hmm. and some last longer than others. And,
yep.
And so thank you for sharing that. Are there any questions that have come up at all? Does anyone have any?
No, but I shared the poem and everyone loves it.
Oh, good.
Oh, nice.
Good. Well, we appreciate Mike being here and we miss you, Steve, if you're watching, and it's never the same without you. But you guys have an awesome, I guess fall is officially beginning tomorrow. So enjoy the fall, enjoy the football games tomorrow, and we will see you back next month, and we have a surprise for you. We will be inviting people to corporate. We're going to have a mobile sauna and cold plunge here, and we will be doing the podcast from inside the sauna. We love you. We'll see you next month.